Now that we have spirited you away from the Ministry of Sports, we're going to Disney World.
Where can I get some good poke?
It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and here with me, as always, are Philip Michaels and David J. Lohr. Hi, guys.
Aloha, nerds.
Das Vidania.
That's not at all. I am defecting from Soviet podcast. You may keep this MiG that is not actually a MiG. I would just like to live in your beautiful Hawaii, and I am from Sweden now.
Now, was he landing in Hawaii in the... Well, we should probably introduce
season
the episode.
Episode 4, from Moscow to Maui. I'll point out that everybody loves alliteration, but Maui does not figure in this episode. Come on.
No. And then Moscow has only minimal involvement.
Maybe he lives on Maui, but he has come... Anyway, this is a story about a Soviet defector who flies a MiG fighter jet. From where, I think, Phil, is your point, to defect in Honolulu?
Yes. No, I think that he is actually, if I remember, his business card says from Arizona. So perhaps he landed it. I'm sure he probably landed it in Hawaii and hightailed it out, because it's not like the Navy would keep him around. One of the heroes in that opening scene, which has precious little to do with Magnum, if you just wandered in, you'd think you were in like the Clint Eastwood movie Foxfire, or whatever the hell it
Call to Glory with Craig T. Nelson.
Mm-hmm. Where there's just people flying. And guys staring at a screen, and
it's like opening scenes of Frankenstein Island, except with jets instead of balloons.
And I love the commanding officer, who everyone is expecting just for him to give the order to blow the plane out of the sky, and he's all, "No, wait for it. Let's see where this is headed.
Yep,
wait for it." And like the look of disgust on his subordinates, and then the Yuri lands his not MiG jet. It says, "Here is a MiG jet. I'm American now." And the look on the guy's face is all, "Oh yeah, this worked out well for me."
I played. It's Cold War intrigue. It's like, well, it could be a stealth attack where one MiG is going to try to shoot some stuff, but I'm betting it's a defector. And then, when he lands, of course, he's personally there on the tarmac to be like, "Oh yeah, I got it."
and I remember at the time I was like, "Oh my God, it's Ray, the homeless guy from Barney Miller." That's the captain.
Oh,
or the
colonel,
or whatever.
Well, there you go. Well, and he's cleaned himself up real nice.
Yeah, he got a hot meal.
I was, "Hey, it's that guying at 10 years old."
This is aired in October of 1981. So it is, heart of the Cold War. And we get this Cold War story in Hawaii and Magnum PI, which is an unlikely place. But I think Magnum definitely, this show did stuff like this. And so we get this story of the Soviet defector. And, the main plot is after he's defected, because that's all like the pre...
This is pre-credits.
Because there's no such thing as pre-credits. But it's like, it's like a tease before the actual story, which is later, where a year later, he comes to Magnum at the estate and says, "I'm not really a Swedish businessman from Arizona. I'm a Soviet defector, and my girlfriend is going to be here with the track team for the whatever Pan Hawaiian Games. And we want to do an extraction, but my American contacts aren't interested in getting her out as a defector," which I question whether that is plausible, but like, so I need Thomas Magnum to help me get her out of from under the watchful eye of the KGB agents and spirit her to freedom. And that's the plot of this episode, is Magnum and friends have to pull off a defection under the eyes of the KGB.
Yeah, I assume that the track team flew into Hawaii because the implication was they were in for a few days and then flying off somewhere else. Maybe it was to acclimate themselves to the climate of the United States, in a state that has climate like no other state in the Union.
I mean, maybe.
So, who knows?
I think there are there's an invitational or something. There's like a track event there. Maybe it's a warm-up for the Olympics or for the World Championships or something.
Magnum mentions that I watched her last year in the Olympics.
Yeah,
that's right.
No, that's true. And because it's 80.
I don't know how, because I don't think they were televised.
They were televised
in
America because, or no, it would have been the 80 Olympics. So
it would have been, yes, it would have been the Moscow Olympics.
They would have been televised.
That those did not exist.
Yeah, let's just say that it's a warm up for the World Championships in 82.
He watched it on that station that shows Tigers games in the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night, even though that they were on during the daytime. Yeah.
Before the gold medal basketball game between Yugoslavia and the Soviet Union, let's cut to this report from downtown Honolulu.
Robin has a C-band satellite that tunes in a Soviet satellite over Siberia.
He gets 3CPTV.
Mm. Yes.
So we get in this episode, there's a lot of good stuff in this episode. I enjoyed this episode. It is the story of Thomas, and it's a cop, not a cop. It is Thomas Magnum, competent-ish, professional, and Yuri, who does not
he
stay
is
in the
imprudent.
Car. So stay
he
in the car.
He kicks trash cans.
I'm so impotence. He keeps screaming.
I hate impotence.
And I wish we had pills for that, Yuri. Word is not what you think it means, sir.
If from Moscow to Maui lasts more than 8 hours, consult Donald P. Belisario.
Yes. This is a great Magnum episode because it is so heavy on the capering. There's so much capers going on, because you have your first caper in which it's Magnum is going to extract the really there are 2.5 capers, because first they go to the practice where he's just going to like pop by and go, hey, come with me.
Defect.
Like, no.
He's like, you have a big sign up like defectors. Yes. This way.
Who wants to defect? Follow this handsome mustachioed man.
Yuri says defectors this way.
Then there's extraction dose, which is at the hotel, in which they come up with a very complicated plot, which is basically all of my friends will serve as distractions, except for TC, who gets to like hang out with me and warn me when there are people coming.
Yep, he's the lookout. That one I love because, as anybody who's been to Hawaii has probably stayed at a place, you may have stayed at a place that looks a little bit like the hotel where they're staying, where there's kind of like low-lying buildings, a couple stories maybe, and then sort of beautiful grounds and plants everywhere, and so you have to walk between the buildings, and there's some water and all that. And I watched this whole episode thinking, man, if I had seen this as a kid before I went to Hawaii for the first time, I would have been like playing help find the defector like it ever all day long at the place we were staying.
What would have been your role? Would you have been the guy who has to distract the one guard by asking him questions about socialism?
Well,
or would you have to, like, as Higgins does?
I would have been Magnum, but there were other roles available, right? You could
yes,
be the,
exactly.
if you have a decent knowledge of communist theory, you could be Higgins, because that's it turns out Higgins has really boned up on his Marx and Engels in order to bamboozle a KGB, a very extremely sweaty KGB agent.
Well, he's wearing a black suit in Hawaii, for heaven's sake. And he looks basically like a Soviet Wallace Shawn, which I also appreciated.
And sounds like one, too.
My dinner with Andropov.
defecting from the Soviet Union. Inconceivable. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Higgins either knew all that stuff about Soviet history going into this caper, or he boned up onto the head of time, and I don't know which is more impressive.
I think he knew it. One of the reasons I love this episode, I mean, the plot, it's okay. I can take or leave the plot.
It's serviceable.
But the character work is so lovely in this one. And that first, I mean, even the first scene where Higgins meets them on the beach is a little more nuanced than the Belisario version of early Magnum and Higgins. But then when Rick and TC are like, you know, it seems like your plan needs one more guy. And he's like, no, I got a guy. You're short one guy. Well, speaking of short, and he goes and has that conversation with Higgins where it's a little more like, hey, you know, we're intelligent human beings. We can interact without just sniping. And Magnum has actually paid attention to Higgins's history, right? He was a liaison to the Soviet army in Vienna after the war.
Yes.
Which, of course, John Hillerman was 13 at the time, but...
Did the zither begin playing in the background?
Exactly. So basically, Higgins was an extra Vienna. In The Third Man.
Yeah,
is what we're
as
getting
soon
at
as he said Vienna, I'm like,
yeah, he was a young soldier in The Third Man, essentially. And I do
Jonathan
love that background.
Higgins died in the sewer in Vienna. How do I know?
I think this is one of my favorite things about Higgins is the idea that he has this whole storied past, and he'll tell you about some of it, but like the idea that it's like, oh yes, I was recruited by the KGB to be an agent when I was working for the army in Vienna, but I rejected that because I'm honorable. It's like, I love that stuff. I love that idea, even though yes, maybe the timing doesn't work. I love that idea that he was there with Harry Lyman and the rest.
The best detail when he's explaining at the end, when he's like, yes, they tried to recruit me. It was distasteful. It was very crude. And I say, well, what happened? Well, I came back to my room and there was a naked woman in my bed. And I knew she was Russian because they use stainless steel for their fillings instead of gold.
Yes.
And it's like, how did you get close enough to check out her fillings?
Well, I saw her naked just in the bed and detail. I immediately looked at her dental work.
Yes.
That's what you got to check.
I know the name of the old Vienna, the Vienna before the war, with its easy charm and Strauss waltzes and silver dental work.
I also like that the moment of patriotism here, where it's like, he's like, Magnum, I of course, I'm not going to help you in one of your silly little schemes. But Magnum knows. Magnum's like, how about we get revenge on the Soviet Union? And Higgins is like, well, all right then.
Well,
I love that. It's a very Cold War moment, but I also like the character bit of it, that it's like Magnum knows he's appealing to another part of Higgins, where it's like, well, Magnum schemes, whatever, but I can stick it to the KGB. Well, then I'm on the case.
And that moment is the first time you hear the Higgins theme, which is just a lovely little jaunty military thing,
right, which they reuse. So they composed Mike Post and Pete Carpenter, according to the Bible of Magnum, magnummania.com, magnum-mania.com, that it was the first time that the Higgins theme is used, and then it's of course reused throughout the rest of the series whenever we need to feel a little something for Higgins and his past and all of that, which is it's nice to see. And in the moment, it's very recognizable. It's like, oh yes, Higgins, right. Even all this time later, rewatching it, I'm like, yes, that's the Higgins music. I know it. I know it well.
Right. It's like when you hear that bass guitar in Star Trek, and you're like, ooh, Spock theme.
So, Phil, what's the half?
Well, caper? The half caper is at the beginning. The abortive, hey, defect with me, everyone.
Hey, I want an autograph.
Right. That's the half. Then there's the full caper at the hotel, and then the final full caper, because while they were busy absconding with Nina, the lovely track star, stupid Yuri either got out of the car, or this was all just a plot by the Russians,
yes,
to lure the defector back so that they could spirit him back to Soviet Russia.
It's a nice twist. I like the twist that it turns out they knew she was, they didn't believe them. They didn't believe her. She's like, oh no, I despise him, because he said, oh no, she denounced me and all of these things.
We practiced ahead of time.
But they know that they can get to him through her. So they dangle her out there, figuring that he'll show up. And indeed,
perhaps they knew he was a bit of a hothead and easily triggered.
Well, he really is. So that would be the KGB doing their job. So anyway, he's gone. Right. He's gone when Magnum comes back to the car. And so then we have this whole other thing, which is that now we have to get, we now have to rescue Yuri, who has been, as it turns out, has been placed in a wooden coffin, where he is going to be taken in a truck for a burial at sea, which presumably is going to be a rendezvous with another ship, and they're going to take him back to the Soviet Union for, as I think Higgins describes, what they will do to him. It's not pleasant,
They'll parade him and make him denounce things.
Go on TV and say terrible things about America, and then they'll torture him and get information about what he knows, and then it's off to a six foot hotel room underground.
Exactly. Once he's not useful anymore, which is pretty straight up. So they have to rescue him, and that's our big action set piece for the episode. Is the sloppy rescue on the pier with Thomas and Rick in a little raft. And
this one is not strategically thought out in their little Sea-Doo raft.
I kind of like that. The whole thing is sideways. Like, they're out there and they're like, what are we going to do? And there's like, the episode doesn't show us part of it. It's tricky with us.
It plays coy.
Right? It's like, well, what happened in there? And it's like, we don't know for a while. Like, did they get him or not? But I like that it's kind of messy and that Thomas keeps kind of like waving at Rick. Like, not yet. Okay, now. Come now. They don't know what they're doing. And TC appears there and is kind of a distraction. And
well, yes. This is the thing that annoys me.
Okay.
Is you have a helicopter.
Yeah.
Helicopter better than little raft.
Little raft under a pier where guys with guns are going to shoot as soon as you pop out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Whereas, I mean, they're going to shoot at the helicopter, but helicopter go fast and far and high. And first off, they don't even have TC land and start buzzing people, because if a helicopter's coming at me, guy with a gun or not, I'm going to run away from the helicopter because those things are big and scary.
Yeah.
But instead, they have TC get out of the helicopter, which I think is a tactical mistake.
I agree.
And like,
this is why we lost Vietnam, Phil.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why they lost the adventure that apparently Thomas planned in Cambodia, was it, to free all the POWs?
Yeah.
So he's to blame. No, there's this whole bunch of what? Huh? But with TC and the other Russian trying to communicate over the whirl of the helicopter.
Helicopters
can go fast!
Yeah, I laughed at the who's on first dialogue there, because it's like, well, okay.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a classic. It's a delaying tactic. But I do think you're right that, like, the solution, as we learned in The Ugliest Dog in Hawaii, is...
the guy with the helicopter swoop in.
Yeah, jump on the helicopter and get out of there is the solution. Yeah.
Yeah, and besides, in this scheme, TC has to jump in the helicopter and ride away, leaving his friends to escape in a little raft.
A little raft, exactly right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
The little rafters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the part of why I love the Abbott and Costello-ness of that is because earlier on when they're trying to spirit her away from the hotel, and it's right at the beginning, and Rick and TC and Magnum are sitting at the bar and they've had drinks, and Rick goes, all right, it's showtime, you pay the bill. And Thomas gets up and just taps TC on the shoulder and is like, you heard him. And TC starts paying the bill, and he's like, wait a minute, I didn't even have a drink.
Yeah.
And all I could think was, okay, you give me two tens for a five, all right. Which is straight out of Abbott and Costello. It was lovely.
I'll throw in that this is a Mike Vihar directed episode. We've already watched one of his before, and he went on to direct a million other things, including he's the best Babylon 5 director. He did a bunch of Star Trek. He did
Quantum Leap.
Yeah, he did a bunch of stuff for Belisario, and then he got in good with the sort of the sci-fi TV and stuff like that. And it was always kind of stylish. This was a very early in his career, so it's a little more straightforward. But, you know, I found the little action set pieces fun, and there's tension anytime.
Yeah.
Honestly, I got to say, one of the classic things about the Cold War and these kind of stories is all you really need to do is say, like, that guy's in the KGB. And, like, everything that guy does, you're like, oh no, what's he going to do next? Because he's scary. Yeah. He's in the KGB. And of course, he ends up, the one guy who is the scariest of all the guys just ends up sweating on a park bench as Higgins talks him to death, which I do like that. Although I also like the misdirect where they're like, then there's this big guy I call him the Turk. There's no reason for that. It's like, we call him the Turk. It's like, well, he's totally part of the KGB. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not really.
He's just a guy.
He's just like a track. He's just like the trainer for the track team.
Or the rando security liaison for the hotel.
Yeah, but it's like that. Mm-hmm. Strangely detailed. We call him the Turk, and also totally wrong. Like they're like, we think, I think I spotted the other KGB agent. It's like, no, you didn't. You really didn't. Yeah.
No, as you were saying, the two easiest ways, just for a shorthand for a villain, in the KGB or with the Ministry of Sport.
Oh yeah. Well, yes, because that's what's worse.
I have the Ministry of Sport.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, he is the guy who you mentioned, the switcheroo. Mm-hmm. Just to tie an end on the last caper, they managed to off camera find Yuri's body in whatever coffin he's stashed in, and switch it with the Ministry of Sport guy who Rick and TC beat up earlier.
Right, which is okay. They're cheating, right? Because it's like, mm-hmm. they're down underneath the pier in the dinghy, mm-hmm. and they have pulled up this guy's body. And put him in the coffin and pulled Yuri out and brought him back down. It's like, there is no way that happened while TC is going like, what? Well, no, what did you say?
Perhaps that Abbott and Costello routine was more distracting than we realized. But Niagara Falls.
But you can tell that it's, you know, that's how we... you know, we get the little twist at the end where it's like, oh, it's the guy from the KGB mm-hmm. is in the coffin who they kidnapped earlier. Yeah. And that's the solution to it. But, you know, Yuri and his girlfriend are fine. They're fine. They work it all out.
Back to Phoenix with them to become Swedish pharmaceutical salespeople.
I guess. Something like that.
I noticed it was a script by Andrew Schneider. This was early in his career, and he was producing the show at the time. He went on to Northern Exposure along with David Chase. And then the two of them went off and he did a Sopranos episode. Hmm. And he's still doing like Chicago Med nowadays, I think. But yeah, he was someone I always liked his work on Magnum, and I really liked his Northern Exposure run. It was when he left Northern Exposure that kind of fell apart. Hmm. But I also noticed that, thanks to Magnum Mania, this was only the second time Magnum mentions his little voice. And I went back, I was like, when's the first one? And it wasn't one of his scripts, but it was when he was running the show. Hmm. And I'm like, cause it's just such a nice touch. And it's what we think of when we think Magnum.
Right.
And it didn't really take hold until the third season, but it's also, there's a little bit of Northern Exposure-ness to it.
I have forgotten how much I enjoy, and I know this is like almost politically incorrect to say these days in terms of art, but like, I love the Magnum voiceovers. I really do.
Oh yeah.
I really do,
they're great. They're
so good.
It is this show with the voiceovers and with breaking the fourth wall a little bit. Like, those are some of the reasons that I loved this show when I was young, and I appreciate it to this day. Like, hearing Magnum's thoughts and having him kind of like ponder what's going on, it changes the tone of it. It makes it a kind of a noir-ish detective convention, but also at the same time, I don't know. I really love those voiceovers, and in this episode, it works really well.
It's a cheap detective show, so why not have the cheap detective trope?
Right.
Yeah.
And plus, it's Magnum. Magnum's telling you about his adventures. You're at the Command Man Club. You're having a drink with Magnum. He's saying, "Hey, let me tell you about this one time a guy named Yuri came and wanted me to spring his old lady from the clutches of the Soviets."
Yeah.
You guys have pointed out the careers of the director and the writer of the. So I feel I have to throw in.
Okay.
And the only bit of information I have is that Soviet Wallace Shawn, apparently, according to IMDb, is still with us.
Okay.
He's one of those guys too. He shows up in everything.
The thing I recognize him from is an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm about the Holocaust, funnily enough.
Hmm.
So he's 94 years young.
Wow.
Oh yeah, he has been in a million things.
Mm-hmm. Now, another thing that jumped out at me this time, because, you know, obviously the first time you watch it, you don't know where the series is going. It's a new show. It's still, you know, young in its life. And there's that line early on where Yuri is trying to hire him. And he says, you know, now I have the chance to have my love with me. You know, we've been separated and spy things. And, you know, now she could be here. Do you understand? And Magnum actually looks thoughtful before he says yes. And then he just kind of keeps going, right? It's just this very subtle thing. The very next episode is when we meet Michelle and get the start of that whole mythology arc. Right, and it's like, oh, they knew that when they made it. That's so nice.
That script was already in the works, so they could actually get that to be consistent. It's nice. I like this episode. I thought it was a lot of fun. I, like, again, it's got the voiceover. It's got some action and some heists. It's got that whole running around in the resort and then going back to the car and he's not there anymore, which is pretty nice kind of funny twist. It's got the showdown with TC's Abbott and Costello routine at the end. Like, it was fun. This is a fun kind of. A little twist on the format where it's this international incident. I do have a lot of questions about how there's just a random PI from Hawaii causing an international incident and whether the government, this is why you say yes to Yuri when he says, I want to help my girlfriend defect and not say, call Magnum PI instead.
Well, yeah, I assume it was one of Magnum's old Navy intelligence buddies that pulled the guy aside and said, you should talk to Thomas Magnum.
I assume so, too. But perhaps they could have been officially involved in this one and actually done this. But you know, it's a fun episode. It was I really enjoyed this one. This is I feel like as we randomly selected, I should say, both of these episodes. The last time we recorded, Phil talked to Siri and we had a conversation and Siri said, I think you should watch From Moscow to Maui.
Yes, and exactly. Siri is weirdly conversant on Magnum PI.
Siri really liked how it sort of maybe influenced The Hunt for Red October.
Yeah, so
I felt the eighth season was one too many.
So what I'm saying is I find it interesting that we seem to be in this rut where we're ping-ponging back and forth, not to give anything away from what I suspect will happen in our next episode and what happened in our previous episode, but we're ping-ponging back and forth between episodes that are good and episodes that are bad. But I think what is illustrative of that is it's helping me kind of, since I haven't watched much of this show since it was originally on, kind of crystallize what a good Magnum episode is and what a bad Magnum episode is. And this is a good Magnum episode. It's not maybe great, not maybe a classic, but like, I was thoroughly entertained and I was delighted at several points. And it was like, you got to the end of the hour and I was like, Magnum PI, it's great. And that, I like that. And then the bad ones, we'll talk about them in another episode, but those are like, oh, and this is when it wasn't, they did 24 of these a year and they weren't all gems, folks.
Can't all be gems, folks.
Nope.
Yeah, this one does what it says on the box, and it does it pretty well.
Yeah, there's Magnum, there's PI, there's there's TC, there's funny. Rick, there's Higgins. I mean, again, Phil, you've talked about this to me a lot when we've talked about it, and I know that all three of us have talked about it before, but like, a big part of the secret sauce of Magnum PI is the ensemble. And in this, everybody gets something to do, and you get Higgins moments and TC moments and Rick moments. It's like, why is Rick in the raft? Because that's Rick's part to play, and TC has his parts, and Higgins has his part where he bores Russian Wall of Shawn to death. And like, that's part of the appeal of it, is that the whole gang gets something to do. And that, I think that makes for a good, kind of archetypally good Magnum episode.
Oh, yeah.
Anything
Concur.
Else?
No, that's. Well, I think we've put a little pin in Moscow to Maui, and this caper is all wrapped up. Oh no, David's been kidnapped! It was all a ruse.
Why did he leave the car? I don't understand.
Impotence.
I hate impotence. What can I say?
Does anyone love impotence?
KGB loves impotence. American impotence.
I hate impotence. Kick garbage can. Mm. That's not what impotence is, Yuri. And since I have his page open, homeless guy from Barney Miller, who is in like 10 episodes, he played a doctor in 5 episodes of the old Battlestar Galactica, which is probably where Belisario saw him.
Yeah,
Well, there you go. We've bottomed out his career too.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. I really love the Magnum PI episodes where they have Russians on, because it very much is get Moose and Squirrel with the with the level of the acting.
Yep.
So I think that's great.
They're the heavies. All right. I just want to say Maui does not appear in this episode at all.
No.
They didn't. Not even like, you know, he landed at the Kahului Airport, right? Like, nope.
Not even at the end do they say, and then we spirited Yuri and Nina off to Maui, where they would be safe.
They're by Whaler's Village now. They're under the banyan tree in Whaler's Village. That's where they are now. Mm-hmm. Nope. They're on the road to Hana. They took the road to Hana. There's nothing in Hana, so no one will ever find them there, right? Nope. There's none of that. None of that. All right. Well, it's been Moscow, and it's been Maui, and it's been Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell. Thank you, as always, David J. Lohr and Philip Michaels. Bye, guys.
I would have liked to have seen Nebraska.
Or Montana. Any of the states.
I would have liked to have seen the road to Hana. Maui. Maui.
These are the list of places I would have liked to have seen. Well, my life ebbs from me.